is Jill Severson, and I'm talking on the phone with Gila Seversky.
I'm in Jerusalem.
You've been involved as an activist for peace and human rights for quite a few years in Israel, that you served for 6 years as the director of the New Israel Fund, a foundation that works to strengthen democracy, and that you've been a member of Women in Black since 1988, and you co-founded the Coalition of Women for Peace. So you are also executive director of Bat Shalom and chairperson of B'Tselem. And we're speaking on the 23rd of July. You had forwarded me an update about a peace rally that happened yesterday on Saturday, where you had stated that probably about 5,000 people. Haaretz reported at least more than 2,500. And it sounds like it was made up of both Jewish-Israeli peace organizations as well as Palestinian, you know, quote-unquote, Israeli-Arab organizations. Tell us how you're feeling after that rally.
My feelings all through that rally were wonderful. It was so elating to be among people who agreed that this war is hellish and has to be stopped. We meet in small pockets, those of us who agree that the war should not continue and the occupation should end. But to meet together like this, to fill up a huge plaza in Tel Aviv and everybody shouting the same slogans, it felt so empowering. It was just a wonderful feeling. And walking along, I was like walking on air to think that all of us here are a strong, solid group and we're going to plow on until we end this war.
Do you want to mention a number of the organizations that were involved to give us a sense of how broad this rally was?
Well, it included some of the Arab political parties in Israel, primarily the Hadash party and the Balad party. It also included many of the largest peace organizations. The Coalition of Women for Peace is probably the largest one that participated, and the largest one in general in Israel. Also, Gush Shalom was an active participant. The Rabbis for Human Rights were there. Ta'ayush, which means partnership. It's a partnership of Israeli Arabs and Israeli Jews for peace. But just everybody, even those who are not affiliated, were there. And needless to say, all the Women in Black vigils were represented at the rally.
According to this Haaretz report, it said some of the chants included, "We will not kill, we will not die in the name of Zionism," and "We will not die and will not kill in the service of the United States."
That's right.
And so do you want to say anything more about that as far as the perception of what's going on? And maybe you can be specific about if we're talking about Gaza or especially Lebanon as far as the relation to the U.S. Clearly, our president and Secretary of State have, to say it minimally, taken a cool stance against the massive civilian deaths.
Mm-hmm.
But what's your opinion? What's the opinion amongst the peace movement?
There's no question that Israel could not have embarked upon this war without the approval of the United States. Israel is funded, fueled, and armed by the United States. As a matter of fact, the United States is right now rushing in new fighter planes for Israel that it did not have in its arsenal before. If George W. Bush was not in full approval, Israel would have not been able to engage in this kind of brutal warfare. We know that the rest of the world is, or most of the rest of the world, is opposed, and that, broadly speaking, includes Europe. It's really horrifying to me that the United States would support this kind of aggressiveness. The only explanation I have is that it feeds into American policies vis-a-vis Iraq. The so-called war on terror is being waged in the eyes of George W. Bush, not just in Iraq and Afghanistan, but by Israel as well against neighboring Arab countries. It justifies American aggressiveness in the world. And perhaps that's the reason, in addition to, of course, supporting the American arms industry.
Yes, that was actually the second news account I was going to mention. It was from the New York Times on the 21st on Friday, which said, as you just mentioned, that, quote, "The Bush administration is rushing a delivery of precision-guided bombs to Israel, which requested the expedited shipment last week after beginning its air campaign against Hezbollah targets in Lebanon."
It made me wonder if America does not want Israel to finish the fighting, or actually I should say, it made me wonder if America does not want a ceasefire because it wants to test some new weapon that it has. That's often been the fate of Israel to be a testing ground for American weapons. And it makes me wonder if this is not another example of it.
That, for me, brings up a question, which I know it's been reported usually from through one source, but in Gaza that they had recently, you know, again, the past month, kind of different kinds of cases where it looked like it was more chemical weapons or something. Have you heard about that?
No, that is a report that we have found no evidence about. There is no evidence that Israel is using any form of chemical or germ or other non-conventional warfare in Gaza. The only horrible thing that, I mean, all weapons are horrible, but the most specifically non-conventional thing is something that has unfortunately become rather routine, and that's depleted uranium-tipped weapons, and that's been used extensively by Israel as well as the United States to enhance the penetration power of certain kinds of ammunition.
Some of what we're trying, I'd say, at this point in the U.S. is clearly to continue to contact our legislators, State Department, President, etc. And so I guess I'm wondering what different methods besides kind of coming out for rallies, doing interviews, what things are you trying right now?
We do many different things here. You do different things there. Let me separate that for a moment. In Israel, we're constantly doing demonstrations, small and large. We have petitions that are going around, ads we place in newspapers. We're bombarding our elected representatives with faxes and phone calls. We're doing leafleting. We're doing a lot of internet work because Israelis sometimes, especially certain language Israelis, tend to get their news from the internet rather than the television or radio, in Russian language, for example, and in Arabic for Arabic speakers in Israel. We do a lot of postings on the internet and special websites to keep people abreast of our point of view and our demand that the occupation end and the invasion end. In the United States, it's really important to raise the profile on the demand for the United States to intervene and end the fighting, call for a ceasefire. This is Israel, as I said before, could not do what it does without American sanction, without approval by George Bush. It's very important for Americans to get out the word through your own demonstrations, letters to the editor, op-eds in newspapers, faxes to your elected leaders, phone calls to them, in every way possible. I recently heard an Israeli politician say, we figure we have about a week or two until international pressure stops us. Well, that pressure is not in a vacuum. It means the faster we get people on the streets with our message, the faster Israel will stop. So clearly, Israel and the United States are sensitive to public opinion, and that's why we have to get it out there as quickly as possible.
I don't think that people have a lot of hope here. I think that, you know, having been there and just obviously thinking about the amount of power that we have in the United States compared to so many places to speak up and use our voices, I think that's something that most Americans kind of undervalue or don't realize the power. Then obviously we look at Bush and look at the administration and realize that they haven't listened to us. You know, when we've done anti-war in Iraq protests, even into the thousands, you know, across the states, they don't seem to be listening. So there is that. We do have one.
Well, but I think they are listening, but it's cumulative and it's incremental over time. There's no instant way to get them to stop what they're doing. But there is a cumulative effect of all of the demonstrations and all of the letters to the editor and all of everything. It does have an impact over time. That's what stopped the war in Vietnam, even though there were so many American politicians who wanted to continue it. Ultimately, they had to concede to American public opinion, and that can stop the war here, too. We fought in a war against Lebanon for 23 years until finally it was a women's peace movement that stood up and said enough. And within 2 years of when they began their outreach, Israel stopped fighting in Lebanon. It does make a difference, but it doesn't happen overnight. And it's everyone doing every little thing, from prayer to mass rallies. All of that makes a big difference. It takes time, but ultimately it makes a difference. And for the people who remain alive and unscathed after that war is over, you have saved their lives. So it's important to keep doing it.
Thank you for that. Last week I had the opportunity to attend a meeting, and it was actually more of a emotional sharing and then the business meeting afterward of the local Brit Tzedek group. My question would be, what would you say to Jewish Americans who are struggling with how to support justice or how to respond to this situation?
I think it's wonderful to get hooked up with a group like Brit Tzedek V'Shalom. I don't know, perhaps you can give a website and address, but that's an organization that has, I think it's probably by now the largest advocacy organization for peace in Israel. And it's what I love about that organization is that it's not anti-Israel. It's an organization of Jews who love Israel and want to fix what's wrong. And so I really encourage people to hook up with them and work through them.
What would you say to Arab Americans and Palestinians specifically about Israel? Does it have a right to exist, or what's...
Oh, for sure. First of all, about Brit Tzedek V'Shalom, I quickly looked it up, and their website is btvshalom.org. That's B like Bob, T like television, and V like Victor. And it's all one word, btvshalom.org. Arab Americans, I'm sure, have their own organizations, but I'm not familiar with that scene. It's really clear to me that the reality in the Middle East has to ultimately resolve in a two-state solution. The state of Israel, free, secure, and independent, side by side with the state of Palestine, free, secure, and independent. That's the only way for two wonderful nations who have a history of suffering and the need to have their own country can sort out the problem. In Israel, the vast majority of Jews and Arabs inside Israel and the vast majority of Palestinians in the occupied territories, all of us agree that the way to resolve the issue is by creating two states side by side that live in cooperation and coexistence. I'm not now speaking for the peace movement. I'm really speaking on behalf of the 70 or more percent of Israelis and 80 or more percent of Palestinians who feel this way. So there are those who reject each other's right to exist, extremists on both sides, but the vast majority of us are moderates who see that there's room for both, and that's the only way to end the conflict.
Where we're at right now, clearly the immediate is having to address what's going on in Lebanon and obviously within Israel and Gaza. But then beyond that, what's next? To me, it seems like one of the lessons that I've heard people address about especially what happened in Gaza and really in Lebanon in both situations is the perspective of what happens after unilateral withdrawal or unilateral actions. And I know obviously Prime Minister Olmert had the unilateral plan having to do with the West Bank. Where's that at, or where are things at?
Unilateralism will not work. The only way to really end the conflict is for both sides to work together on a practical solution that resolves all the outstanding issues. The unilateral approach says, let's have Israel move back close to where the old border used to be, and that's that. We will have ended the occupation. But that does not address some of the basic issues. First of all, the border has to be the border that had been prior to the occupation, and that border is not defined by Israel's separation barrier. It's defined by the ceasefire lines that existed until 1967. That's the border that works. There may be adjustments made to it, but that's the basic line that must be drawn between both peoples. The other issues that are not addressed by unilateral withdrawal to any border is what to do about Jerusalem, a city that's cherished by both sides, that once belonged, part of it belonged to Palestine, part of it belonged to Israel. What do we do now? Do we redivide it, or do we keep it united and somehow share it as the capital of each side? I fall on the side of sharing it, and there are many practical ways to go about doing that. The issue of refugees would not be addressed by a unilateral action. What do we do with 750,000 Palestinian refugees who were created after 1948 when Israel got its independence? And those 750,000 are today several million. So there are a lot of issues that would not be addressed by a unilateral approach. It just doesn't make sense. If you want to make peace, then you have to sit down, both sides together, and figure out how to resolve the issues that divide us.
And do you have a sense at this point of how that's going to happen, like how coming out of the massive civilian deaths both in Gaza, in Lebanon, how are we going to be able to proceed out of this? Do you have any sense, or we're just going to have to wait and see?
Well, I feel that, unfortunately, we will have regressed as a result of this escalation over the last few weeks, actually months now, in Gaza. I'm so heartbroken over that, because prior to the escalation of events which began in Gaza, both the Israeli and Palestinian peoples were very close to saying, okay, let's lay down our guns and figure things out. I know, of course, that the Israeli Prime Minister was talking about a unilateral withdrawal, but most Israelis and the vast majority of Palestinians understood that we really have to resolve all the issues, not just border. So that had been close to beginning, despite the obstacles of Hamas being in power and despite the obstacles of Olmert's concept of unilateralism, there was still a dynamic leading towards sitting down and negotiating. And now that so many have been killed in both Gaza and Lebanon, and there's so much new enmity between both sides, I know that's going to be set back. And we will have to begin again rebuilding the small trust that had existed and rebuilding the belief that we can sit down and negotiate a fair settlement that both sides can live with.
Yes. Is there anything else that you want to say or anything else that I didn't ask that you think is important at this point?
I would also like to encourage people to check out our website. We're thecoalitionofwomen.org. It's all one word, coalitionofwomen.org. We have a website in English, Hebrew, and Arabic. Speakers of all three languages can go in there and see ways to become involved and support us in our work and be on our mailing list to hear updates about the peace movement in Israel.
Thank you so much, Gila Saversky, speaking to us from Jerusalem about the current situation, about what we can do.
And thank you so much for having me.
So my name is Jill Severson. I'm here with KBOO 90.7 Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. And I have on the line Sam Bahur, a Palestinian-American who is expecting to return to the West Bank where he works.
Thank you. It's great to be speaking to someone in Portland, Oregon, which is close at heart. Before I relocated to Palestine, I used to have a client, Hannah Henderson, in Portland. So I used to like visiting and going to Powell's bookstore and the whole nine yards. Sadly, the U.S. government no longer stands on any moral high ground after Iraq. President Bush came out the other day and spoke in support of Israel destroying the civilian infrastructure, basically, of Lebanon and previously of Gaza because of these Israeli combat soldiers that were taken prisoner. After taking and plucking people from the entire Middle East area, Afghanistan as well, Iraq, and taking them to Cuba, to Guantanamo Bay, thousands of miles away from their home, torturing them and not giving them the right to due process, I don't think the U.S. is in any position to advise the Palestinians, or for the Israelis for that matter, on what should or should not be done. We have to remember that the core issue here is that there is an occupier and an occupied people, and that applies in Iraq and it applies in Palestine as well. And occupation has rules. Either the international community applies international and humanitarian law, and thus even the occupation will have a legal framework to operate within until it ends, and it must end, or there will be the law of the jungle. Unfortunately, both the U.S. in Iraq and Israel in Palestine and now in Lebanon have chosen to apply the law of the jungle. And in the law of the jungle, there are no rules. So again, no one holds any moral high ground. At the end of the day, the Palestinians, as an occupied people, as described in international law, are a protected people. And a protected people have rights. Part of those rights are that their citizens cannot be imprisoned outside of their occupied areas. Regardless of that, Israel has taken thousands of Palestinians and imprisoned them within Israeli jails, within Israel proper. International law also says that the occupying power cannot move their civilian population into the occupied territory. Despite that, we find thousands of Israeli settlers who have been implanted by their government across the West Bank and previously throughout the Gaza Strip to instigate and to provoke a more desperate continuation of this conflict. We as Palestinians did not come up with the slogan, give me liberty or give me death, but I can bet you that the Palestinians will apply that until this occupation ends. We have no other way to go but to freedom and independence from this illegal, discriminatory occupation.
Do you want to say anything about the idea of the prisoner exchange or where things are at this point?
Sure. I mean, one thing that we must acknowledge is that by Israel outright denying the situation, the ability to be negotiated out of, would be laughable if not so many people were dying on both sides of the border, both in Israel, Lebanon, and in Palestine. Because historically, Israel has entered into negotiations, even with Hezbollah, the organization that most recently kidnapped the last two soldiers. And they've done it not once, not twice, I think three times in history. And they've traded not only live prisoners, but remains of Israeli army personnel for Arab and Palestinian prisoners. Israel has previously entered into negotiations with the PLO itself before they recognized the PLO even in prisoner exchanges. So there's a whole history behind prisoner exchanges between Israel and Palestinians and Arab organizations. If I had the power to bring those soldiers, Israeli soldiers back to their home tonight, I would do so. Just as if I had the power in my hands to bring the 9,000 Palestinians lingering in Israeli jails, I would bring them home as well today. But I don't. And the fact of the matter is, prisoners are not the issue. The prisoners are a symptom of a much more deeper problem. The problem of a continued occupation will just continue to spark more violence in the area. And to be honest with you, I think if Mexico took over Texas, I think Texas would take many more prisoners of war than the Palestinians have if they were 39 years into this occupation. The fact of the matter is the Palestinians have tried every means of nonviolent resistance. They've tried every means of diplomatic resistance. They've tried every means of yelling out to the international community to interfere. Time and time again, the U.S. has stood in the way of a negotiated settlement. The U.S. has stood in the way of bringing in third parties to bear witness, at least, to what's going on. The result of that 39 years of a continuation of supporting the occupation and occupying the Palestinians is resulting in what we see today, of prisoners being taken, of homes being destroyed, of walls being built. The U.S. is on the wrong side of history in this specific conflict. It may not be totally their fault. It may be the fault of the U.S. system that allows lobbies to become so powerful that foreign interests can affect in a long-term way how the U.S. practices its foreign policy. We need to go back to the ABCs. There's an occupied people who are being brutally occupied by Israeli forces. It's time that the U.S. stands up and takes the right side of history in calling for the end of this occupation, like finally we did in South Africa, called for the end of apartheid.
On Tuesday this week, Prime Minister Hania written a letter that was published in the Washington Post, Aggression Under False Pretenses. Do you have any comments?
This is just one more example of this democratically elected government giving very clear signals to the international community, and I think this being in the Washington Post, to the U.S. administration specifically, that they will accept a two-state solution, that they will accept Israel's right to exist. However, they will not do that for free in a political sense, because the Oslo process used a premise that the Palestinians would give all of their concessions up front and the Israelis in due time would end the occupation. That formula did not work. And I think a child in Palestine today can understand that we cannot continue to give concessions without seeing the end of the occupation at the end of the tunnel. What the Hamas government and Ismail Haniyeh is saying in that article is very clear. They're saying that, yes, Israel could be given the right to exist in a political sense, as well as us living in peace as two sovereign states. However, that cannot happen by putting pressure on the Palestinians to do anything before the Israelis come to the negotiating table. What we have seen during the last several years is Israel turning its back away from negotiations, refusing to negotiate with Yasser Arafat before his death, refusing to negotiate with his successor Mahmoud Abbas, who is one of the most moderate Palestinians that exist in the political arena, and now refusing to negotiate with Hamas government. Israel does not want to negotiate, and I don't think we need any more examples of them showing that they don't want to find a Palestinian partner. Their Palestinian negotiating partner is in the Washington Post this week saying, come and negotiate on international law terms and we're willing to come to peace. It's Israel that's refusing to come to the table because they want to apply the law of the jungle and not the law of international and humanitarian law.
I think that's one of the most frustrating things since the election of Hamas, that double standard that Hamas is expected to recognize the state of Israel, and it's just implied that Israel is recognizing the state of Palestine only in practice. Clearly, that's not the case with all the wall being built, with all the settlements continuing to be built. And I think that was something from the Oslo process that was a huge mistake of not having the settlements stopped in writing. Then under Barak, settlements were built at even a higher rate, I believe, than they had been previously.
Absolutely. This is what the Palestinians saw as the result of them entering into a negotiated settlement. Israel just continued to create facts from the ground. I recently was at a lecture in Jerusalem and asked an ex-Israeli foreign minister official. He was making the case that Hamas is refusing to acknowledge Israel's right to exist. I asked him a question if he, as an Israeli official, would be willing not to recognize Palestinians' right to exist, but to acknowledge that Israel is an occupying force. He wouldn't even do that. So Israel is not looking to end this conflict as far as we can see. They're looking to continue to provoke, to become the aggressor, to keep the area in a sense of continuous chaos, hopefully for them organized chaos, maybe with their entry into Lebanon less organized now. But at the end of the day, the end game to this conflict is in the books, in the newspapers, and I think in every official's mind. If Israel wants to come and end this conflict today, they have the power to do it as the occupying force. The Palestinians, as the occupied people, have no option but to resist the occupation, and hopefully with smart means, because the goal of resisting is not only to resist, but the goal of resistance is to be able to end the occupation. And I would urge my own people to resist in ways that garner international support, to resist in ways that bring more and more Israelis on board to see that their government is acting illegally. Their government is turning into a rogue state in the Middle East. And I think if we resist in a smart way, this occupation will come tumbling down, just like the ones previous to it in other parts of the world, and just like the racist state of apartheid that came tumbling down. International will, once moved, can bring this to an end.
My name is Jill Severson, and I have
Samar El-Khoury Kapler
on the phone, and she's one of the organizers for the Sunday rally to come out to speak out against the civilian deaths in Lebanon, Israel, and Palestine. The rally meets at 1 p.m. in Pioneer Courthouse Square this Sunday, the 30th of July. So why should people come out for the rally on Sunday?
There are three main reasons for the people to come. First, the horror and the terror the Lebanese people and the Palestinian people in Gaza have been living in the last 13 days is beyond description. This is the third major military action of Israel in Lebanon, but this doesn't compare to anything has done before. The whole country is held hostage, so we do need to show our support for the people that are there and for the people here who are from Lebanese and Palestinian origin and Arabic origin. And the third main reason that I think we need to be involved here as a Lebanese American and American in general, it's because our government has been from the beginning supportive and almost encouraging of this military action, and it just pained me to see that my tax money is going to kill people, especially my people. So I hope everybody will feel the same way and look at the facts and come join us to just send a message that this has to stop. The fire has to stop, and we need to start sending more humanitarian aid and starting negotiations for a permanent peace in the area.
Thanks so much. So again, that rally will be this Sunday, July 30th, 1 p.m., Pioneer Courthouse Square. The intention to call for an immediate ceasefire in Lebanon and Gaza, to give a humanitarian aid to the people in Lebanon and Gaza, and to start negotiations. And for more information, you can look on the AUPHR website. That's auphr.org. You can also call your congressional representatives and have them support Kucinich's Resolution 450, which does call for a ceasefire. This has been Jill Severson for KBOO.
And you're listening to KBOO in Portland, Oregon, where the time is a little bit after 1 minute after 11 in the morning. Coming up next, Democracy Now!
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or radiocab.net.